Hey, if you're looking to add a new supplement product to your line, or if you're looking to start a new supplement line, then this episode is for you. We go in deep with what ingredients are trending, what is hot right now, and what is up and coming. Take a listen. Welcome to Health Business Mastery, the Creative Thirst Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Hewitt. So my guest today is Gene Bruno. He has 42 years of dietary supplement industry experience with a master's degree in nutrition and a second master's degree in herbal medicine. He has a proven track record of formulating innovative, evidence-based dietary supplements. Mr. Bruno currently serves as both the Vice President of Scientific and Regulatory Affairs at NutraScience Labs and Professor of Nutraceutical Science at Huntington University of Health Sciences. Gene, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, you have quite an extensive background.
That just means I'm old and been in the industry a long time.
Just means you know your stuff.
Well, you know, after this many years, I hope I know something. So, yeah.
I'm sure it's going to be a good show. I thought I'd grab you and get you in front of the mic today to kind of just talk about some of the trends we're seeing in 2023, 2022, even maybe see where you see supplements going kind of in the future. Let's kind of kick it off with what's your thoughts on some upcoming trends or upcoming ingredients that you're seeing on the horizon?
So, I mean, there's a lot of different ingredients that I'm seeing. And I write articles sometimes on trends and what's going on. And in terms of sort of upcoming popular ingredients, one of them isn't, you know, unknown to the industry, but I think it's continuing to gain traction, and that is vitamin K2. You know, vitamin K2, some years back, it was sort of predicted to be sort of the next vitamin D. Well, it's not quite close to the next vitamin D yet in terms of sales in it and everything. But there's just some fascinating research that's been going on about it. You know, one of the things that I think is really interesting is that from the perspective of bone health, we know the role of vitamin K in helping to form certain bone matrix proteins that helps to hold on and keep the calcium in the bone. And the other thing that it does is it helps to keep the calcium out of the arteries, meaning that when in research where subjects use 180 micrograms a day of K2, it was found that they had less incidence of arterial calcification, which is very cool. Now, that being said, there's a newer study that's been done where they actually used a little over 300 micrograms, much higher dose. But the study found in humans that it actually helped to reverse arterial calcification, not just help prevent it, but actually help to reverse it. So that's pretty cool. And then, of course, at 180 micrograms, it was also shown to be very effective in helping to maintain healthy bone. So it's one of those ingredients that has a few different applications and, you know, could certainly be a cool thing to include in bone formulas or artery health formulas, that sort of thing. So that's one of the ones that I think is pretty interesting and that's trending. Another trending ingredient is astaxanthin. Again, not new, but I'm seeing it more and more in use. And I've written a couple of articles on astaxanthin for Vitamin Retailer magazine. But one of the things I like about it, besides having multiple applications at different dose levels, trending in anti-aging and skin type of ingredients are always in demand. And certainly there's been some very good research on astaxanthin at as little as 4 milligrams being really good for skin barrier function, for helping in to reduce the appearance of fine lines and wrinkles compared to placebo, dry skin improvement, skin elasticity improvement, you know, all kinds of positive effects on the skin. And again, gold standard, they compared it to placebo, found to be very effective. And then, you know, when you get up into higher doses of of 6 milligrams, then you start seeing benefits for the eyes, for the macular region of the eyes, and you could even go higher at 12 milligrams to see benefits for athletic performance. It's just so many things going for it. But I'd say sort of in general, that whole skin health thing for anti-aging approaches is one of the things that makes it a popular upcoming ingredient. Now, when you really want to talk about an ingredient that has multiple application and is very much trending, is resveratrol. I'm sure, certainly you, and I'm sure your listeners, many of them, are familiar with resveratrol in general, that sort of ingredient made popular because of the French paradox, where the French eat a lot of fatty foods and smoke and yet have a lower rate of cardiovascular disease than we Americans do. And it was considered to be a major part of that was that their consumption of red wine as a source of resveratrol, a very powerful antioxidant polyphenol, seemed to have a very profound effect in maintaining cardiovascular health. And then it got really popular when it was discovered that it actually helped to activate the SERP1 gene, which is the longevity gene. Mm-hmm. And that was shown at as little as 150 milligrams of the stuff had that effect. But oh my gosh, I mean, there's been studies on resveratrol for helping in inflammation, cardiovascular health, cognitive benefits, different levels, different doses having these effects. Even when used before meals and helping to reduce body fat. And one of the ones that I think has made it particularly popular just in the last year or two is the research on it showing it to help promote a very specific aspect of immune function, namely gamma delta T cells, which are very much involved in fighting off viral infections like coronavirus. And so, during the pandemic, I myself used 1,000 milligrams of resveratrol daily, and I gave that to my family because that was the amount shown in human clinical research to boost these gamma delta T cells. And then just a couple months ago, a study was published showing that really high doses, like, 4 grams a day, which is very high, but only for 15 days, was given to an active COVID-19 population. They had a placebo group, and they found substantially reduced incidence of the COVID getting worse, of them having to be hospitalized, of reducing pneumonia incidence. I mean, really some very cool stuff. So I'm not surprised that resveratrol is trending quite a bit.
That's one that's been around for a few. Yeah, resveratrol has been around for quite a long time, too.
It has.
So
a good decade, it's been very popular,
Yeah, would you say it's kind of held the popularity, or it has like ebbs and flows, or not even just for resveratrol, but just in general? Like,
I would say that from what I'm seeing in the numbers, it is continuing to grow. The sales and the interest in it is progressing. I'm seeing more. Part of it is like, if you look at the history of something like vitamin D, I remember when vitamin D was just, it's the sunshine vitamin, helps you absorb calcium.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it. Then it seemed like every other week there was a new study being done on vitamin D, and they were discovering a new function, a new benefit from supplementing. And though it's not quite at that level, I'm consistently seeing new studies coming out on resveratrol, indicating that amongst researchers, there's a lot of interest. And I'm seeing more and more brands. I was just at the Natural Products Expo East show in Philadelphia, and I saw, more brands having resveratrol than certainly previously did, and talked to a number of people who have also recognized this increase in popularity. But I think it's because new research comes out, and then people get excited, and as it continues to go in that direction, it's just growing substantially.
Any takeaways from that show, or like any things you've seen that maybe went in the opposite direction of like, yeah, this was really popular at the last show or maybe 3 years ago, but now it's kind of died?
I'll tell you something about, for me, Expo West is a much more happening show. It's like 4 times as large. You have a lot more companies there and you see a lot more going on. Expo East, I didn't find a lot of things trending. I certainly found a number of companies with, like I mentioned, resveratrol, a number of companies with collagen. Collagen continues to be a big product. But in terms of any real, like a few years ago when, you know, you're at Expo West and it was jokingly referred to as the CBD show because everything was CBD, and you saw that kind of trend, I didn't see any trends of that nature. I will say that I found more gummy manufacturers at this show than I had at previous ones, certainly reflective of the increased interest in alternative delivery forms like gummies. Otherwise, not so much.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So how can brands sort of capitalize on some of these trends?
I'm going to say one of the things that I saw at Expo East and I've seen at Expo West and I've seen for any number of years is brands that come out with a Me Too formula. Oh, this is popular. I'm just going to kind of copy somebody else's formula, or I'm going to use kind of boring ingredients. And so what I'm going to say is, if you're looking at an ingredient or you're looking at a trending category, offer something different that's not Me Too. Like, for example, since the pandemic, certainly, you know, immune as a category has increased. But because of that, stress and sleep are categories that have increased substantially because people were having issues with that. So let's look at sleep. When you think of sleep and you think of the nutraceuticals and in this industry, probably the first thing that most people think of is melatonin. Certainly melatonin works really well. But here's the issue. If you're in food, drug, mass outlets, melatonin is kind of the name of the game. That's great. Go for it. But if you're in the natural channel, melatonin has somewhat fallen from grace. It's not the same popular ingredient it used to be. Some people are less likely to want to use it for one reason or another. And so you need to start looking at other ingredients that work well and are different. One of the things I see a lot is mechanistically, people will create a formula and put several ingredients in there that do the same thing. Like maybe they want to increase serotonin. So they put in tryptophan, then they put in 5-HTP. Then they put in something like even a St. John's wort, which affects serotonin levels. So they do several things, but ultimately all of them are increasing serotonin. Well, that's fine, but better to say, let me put in different ingredients that have different mechanisms of action and different outcomes so you get a greater overall effect. So I would say, look at combining other kinds of ingredients like glycine, for example, which has been shown to help with sleep by helping to keep your body temperature down. People get hotter when they sleep. They have trouble sleeping. And glycine has been shown to help that. There's good published clinical research on that and helping to keep you to sleep. It's just a different mechanism of action. Venetron, which is a trade name for Apicetum Venatum, that's been shown to help keep you asleep as well as get you asleep, especially when you combine it with GABA. And these are ingredients that have different mechanisms and that don't have the baggage of, say, a melatonin. So along those same line, you know, healthy aging, certainly, you know, if you want to do something in that category, things like resveratrol are great. But another sort of semi-trending area is NAD promoters, you know, NSMs of the world and the nicotinamide riboside and those kind of things. Looking at combining some things together with that to make it a little more comprehensive approach to aging. And then if you want to include, you know ingredients for aging skin, collagens, astaxanthins, whatever, great thing to do. Then if you're looking at like a category like weight management, which is, you know, always a popular category, hope reigns supreme. When somebody's trying to lose weight, they always want the magic pill, which will never really exist. But there are things that you can do that can help the situation. But caffeine is so overused in this category. You know, thermogenics were the big thing once upon a time. And now, while it still has its place, there's so many other options and directions you can go. One of the areas I love are postbiotics. You know, familiar with prebiotics and probiotics. Postbiotics can either be defined as a metabolic product of a probiotic, like butyric acid is formed from probiotics, or it could be a thermal treated or heat killed probiotic, which sounds bad, but research shows that sometimes these thermal treated ones have some very significant effects. Like they compared in a study Bifidobacterium animalis with the subspecies lactis, and they found that this stuff live compared to heat killed, the heat killed actually worked better in decreasing visceral fat, waist size, wow, BMI. And guess what? You don't have issues with stability. You can put it in a product, no problem. You want to use an alternative delivery form like chocolate or something? No problem. You're not going to have the issue. Gummy, no problem. No stability issues. And you can combine it together with stuff like gum acacia, which is both a prebiotic. So it has a relationship and also reduces appetite. So there's different directions one can go when it comes to cognitive health. Oh my God, the sky's the limit. There's just so many things that everything doesn't have to be the same old, same old. I mean, I'm not even going to begin to list the many, many different unless you really want me to, the many different nutraceuticals that one can use that do different things that help enhance learning, that enhance memory, that enhance focus, all these different areas, you know, that you can go after. I mean, there's even a nutraceutical with a clinical study showing it increased IQ. There's so much to choose from. You don't have to do the same old, and make it like someone else's. So to me, you want to do something different, or you want to do something and capitalize on the ingredients and the trends. Do something different. Do something that is really compelling, and that is going to get you much, much farther. And of course, there's market it appropriately. Do social media, yada, yada, yada.
Of course. From a supplement brand perspective, let's say they're looking to launch a new product or even come on board as a brand new brand in the world. I like that approach of looking at it from the mechanism of action first, right? What about at a higher level, right? So we talked about ingredients, but going like one level higher, some up and coming markets. So before we kind of get into the details of it, first let's kind of unpack the approach of you want to create a new product or you want to create a new brand, right? What kind of approach would you take? Would you take a mechanism action approach there, or would you take more of like a combination of like trendy ingredients or even trendy market? Like I know the bra organ market is one that's up and coming. It's still, at the very infancy stage now, but I think it's going to be a big mover in the future. Love to hear your thoughts on like that. The approach, first the approach of how you would tackle or recommend a new brand approach it. And then second, we can discuss, some of the upcoming trends like mushrooms and organ trends and maybe even eye health or hydration or some of the fringes.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first and foremost, a new brand needs to seriously decide who they're going to be, because what you don't want to be is all over the board. If you're all over the board too much, I've always said, I think science is important when formulating dietary supplements, not necessarily philosophy. Philosophy doesn't substantiate claims, but philosophy is good in determining who you want to be and how you want to present yourself to industry and to consumers and to retailers. So let's decide on that first. Now, I am 100% and always behind saying use clinically relevant doses of nutraceuticals. If you can afford to put in a clinically relevant dose of a nutraceutical, do it. If you can't, try not to. Try not to do a lot of fairy dusting, everything but the kitchen sink. Let me toss in, if you can't dazzle them with brilliance, you baffle them with bull, because you fool people into thinking that the product's going to do something that it won't because you put in all the buzzword ingredients. Okay, don't do that. Be real. It doesn't cost necessarily more or any substantially more to be something real. So start out with let's use the correct doses of the correct ingredients. You not only substantiate claims, but you actually provide consumers with a product that, can do some good for them. Then have a formulation approach that is compelling and scientifically sensible, such as different mechanisms of action for your ingredients. Don't make it all the same, unless you have a really good reason for doing that. A couple of years ago, I spoke at at Supply Side West. I was speaking on stress products. And I was one of several speakers on a panel, and I got up and did my presentation. And mine was just a little bit different than the others because I did the whole thing on mechanism of action, saying, look, guys, if you're going to come out with a product, say, how do I want to attack this? Do I want to, I'm going to attack it from cortisol. I want to attack it from this angle, from that angle. And if you attack, it's, I give the example of like, if you've got a big boulder and you want to break it down into pebbles, you can either have a line of people that all have a sledgehammer and one takes it and hits it, then gets out of the way. The other person goes and hits it in the same place and they keep doing that. Okay, that's an approach. Or you can have different people with different size sledgehammers surrounding the boulder and everybody banging away at it. Guess what? You're going to break that down into pebbles so much quicker. Those are the different mechanisms of action to get the result more effectively. And some people respond better to one mechanism of action than another. So just, it makes so much sense to try that different approach and do that. The products just tend to work so much better in my experience. So I would always recommend clinically relevant doses, different mechanisms of action for multiple ingredient products, and make it real. Make it something to be proud of. Make it something that, assuming you have a conscience, that you can go home at night and sleep well knowing you're helping people and not just, trying to get their money for crap products.
Right, right. Being different is always better from a marketing perspective. It sounds like it's also better from an ingredients perspective too.
Yeah, I would say so. That's kind of how I would encourage people to do a new brand, to look at it in that way.
Yeah, and I guess the second lens to look at it from a new brand perspective is really kind of what market they want to go into, right? So a lot of that comes back to really the founder story, which I talked a little bit about with Vin on the previous episode, right? Typically, supplement entrepreneurs are scratching their own itch, right? Solving their own problem or solving a family member's problem. And then that sort of spurs the desire to...
That initiates it, absolutely. How many people started in this business because I was sick or I have a family member who was sick or has them, and we did this, and my God, what a difference it made in my life. And therefore, that got me into it. Even myself, my maternal grandmother, before I was even born, had cancer and was given like 6 months to live. And she went to see an alternative physician at the time who put her on a detox program and following the right kind of diet, and she got well, and she lived many years thereafter. And that always fascinated me. So that's what got me into the business. And so I think that's a legitimate thing. And that's your motivation. That's part of your story. And that's great. But you still have to, okay, I still need to have a business model here. So how do I build out from that? Yeah.
Right, right. And so, yeah, definitely one approach, definitely a good approach, because that's your story, right? But let's say, I think that needs to be sort of coupled with also where the market is going, right? And what's selling. Because you could have a great solution, but no one wants to buy it. Then it does the great, you solve your problem, but you shouldn't bring it to market,
You're right. Sometimes you're ahead of your time. And I've seen this many times where a product comes out and it's ahead of its time and nobody knows about it. But sometimes you don't even know for sure if you're truly ahead of your time, because sometimes something will come out and it'll just take everybody by storm and boom, that's fantastic. And other times, the work you have to put into educating industry on something can be so overwhelming as just not to be worth it because you're just not going to get the payback. So yes, it has to be an area that people are interested in, that's starting to trending, or you've got some really solid data suggesting it's going to be trending in a major way at some point in the near future.
Like the
or you got a crystal ball.
Well, it's the old saying, right? The pioneers are the ones that get the arrows in the backs because they're going out to the battlefield first, right?
Absolutely.
And I guess the other downside is if it's new, there's not many studies on it.
That's the problem. So let me address that for a minute. So one of my degrees is a master's degree in herbal medicine. And I was lucky enough to be able to study at the University of New England, Armidale, South Wales, Australia, where they have some excellent programs teaching about herbal medicine from both a traditional and a scientific perspective. Now, as we know, there's things like Ayurvedic medicine, traditional Chinese medicine. These things have been in use for thousands of years. They didn't have clinical studies back then, but they gave something to somebody because they saw that it worked and they kept doing it. All right. But there is some good documentation for some of those things. And sometimes when you're making claims, you can also make traditional use claims. We have to be very clear that those are traditional use claims. And we often find that scientific research supports those traditional use claims. So if something is newer or not as well known because maybe it's coming from some other culture, there could still be a direction to go. But what happens when you really have something that's new, a new fruit, a new whatever, something that somebody says, I think this is going to work, but they don't have the human research? Well, you know, you have to make a decision about how you want to proceed. Does it have any research? Does it have animal research? Does it have in vitro, you know, or laboratory research? Do you have something at all to hang your hat on? Because if it's just a belief, that's philosophy. You can't base supplement on philosophy because you can't make any claims. At least legally, you can't make any claims other than, you can't even say, I used it, it did this for me, because according to the FDA and FTC, you have to substantiate that with real science. And so if you're going to do a new ingredient, one of the ways that people, I saw this a lot in CBD, everybody was making all kinds of claims about CBD, science weren't there for all the claims they were making. So sometimes I would see people say, okay, I'm going to create a formula that includes CBD, but includes some other stuff in it. So you can let the other stuff help to support the claims that you're looking to make for that product. And especially if you have experience where a lot of people are using it and they're getting good results, but you can't use that as substantiation, then combine it with something else that you can. And if that's the direction we want to go. That's something to consider if you want to go with ingredients or something that just doesn't have the science yet.
Right. In your opinion, I have a very strong opinion about this, but I'd love to hear your perspective of what do you think are the biggest, like maybe the five biggest supplement categories?
So this one is an easier one to answer because unlike trends, which is, you know, I think this is the direction things are going based on this information and that information.
Right.
If I want to look at the biggest categories, we have numbers, you know, that from different sources, spins, Consumer Reports, various things that says, here's the big category. So we know like the top 10 or even the top 20 or even the top 30 selling ingredients or dietary supplement products out there. And so I'm going to say on the basis of the fact that, not surprisingly, vitamin D is, in terms of the number of people purchasing it, is still number one as an ingredient. Magnesium is next. Omega-3s are next. CoQ10 is next. Multivitamins are next. Vitamin C is next. Probiotics, zinc, curcumin, B12, etc. Now, if you look at all these ingredients, let's say the top 30, you say, okay, start putting them into categories. What categories are still selling best? Oh, vitamin D, C, zinc, probiotics. Immune is still moving, all right? People say, oh, it's going to slow down because people aren't as interested in COVID. But it's not just COVID. The understanding of the effects of nutraceuticals on immune health gained a huge boost because of the pandemic. But now, yeah, it's back to school. People are, you know, it's cold and flu season. All these things are happening, and people are more interested in, you know, taking a proactive approach. So those ingredients are still selling well, and those are big categories. You know, muscle and joint health on the basis of things like magnesium, omega-3s, curcumin, these areas are clearly still significant. By the same token, so are cardiovascular products of, you know, CoQ10, omega-3s, even magnesium for you know, blood pressure. And then, of course, your general stress and energy, multivitamins, B12. There's many other ingredients that fit into this whole thing that are still part of the top 30. But I would say, so for me, immune, muscle and joint, cardiovascular, stress and energy are sort of some of the biggest categories. But there's still a whole lot of others in terms of health categories that are out there and that are trending. Just based on the numbers, I would say those look like the biggest, not as sexy as some, but some of the biggest ones. So what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are like the tried and true, right? So brain health, heart health, weight loss, I wouldn't put immunity there. Well, let's come back to immunity. And the other two are escaping me at the moment. I actually have a list. Let me go to it real quick.
I think those are all very legitimate categories as well. Cognitive is a big category, brain health, cognitive. You know, weight loss, weight management is, you know, always there, bigger at some times of the years than others. But, you know, I would agree that those are happening.
Yeah, the tried and true, right? The ones that are always sell, right? Immunity is a very interesting one because it got such a big lift with COVID. And I think you're right. The culture changed, like something that preventative mindset has changed or became more in the zeitgeist, right? So people never started thinking about that, started thinking about that. However,
yeah,
immunity is a really tough one, I think, to like sell. Like if you were a brand new brand coming out, I would steer you away from immunity only because of the selling channels, right? Because most people are used to going.
Well, it's saturated right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's still a very big popular category, but it's saturated because everybody's gotten into it. It's kind of like when CBD. It had so many brands that eventually it was like, don't even try, you know, so you're not
going to
break into it. But it's still a presence. But it's funny, you mentioned something, made me think how before COVID, you know, I had some brands asking me, hey, should we do an immune product? And I'm like, you know what? People just aren't that big into it. If you want to add it to something like a multivitamin or something, yeah, great, do that. But as a standalone product, it's just not significant. Boom, COVID happened, and everybody wanted immune products, and it was huge. So it's still a very significant category. Will it be in 2 years, 3 years, 4 years? Another question.
Right, right. Well, I just think there's just so many, not only the oversaturation, but when people think about it, that's something they go to their local store for, the local grocery store, the CVS, right? Even Amazon. But in order to really make a brand work through direct-to-consumer, it's typically online, right? It's not in those channels. So to sell a multivitamin or an immunity, I think it's a lot tougher online just because the pain point is not high enough. Now, we can argue that, yeah, it got really high during COVID, right? But we're starting to see that cool down. But I do agree with you that I don't think it will ever go back down to normal. It'll always be one of the higher
ones.
Yeah.
But I was answering the question in regard to what are top selling categories at this time as opposed to where is it going?
Gotcha.
That's a different answer.
Gotcha.
But what's top selling now, according to the data I have, is the ones I mentioned. Where it's going, that's a different question.
Yeah, let's
check. Maybe I misunderstood the question.
No, I probably went in a different direction, which is fine. It's, like I said, more of a fluid conversation. let's chat. Because I want to talk about a couple of things. I want to talk about kind of where it's going. I want to talk about like, selling channel trends that you might be seeing. How should we attack this?
Well, you know, you mentioned some categories You mentioned things like, you know, organs and eye health, hydration. I know mushrooms are. So these are some areas that I think are kind of worth touching on because you're seeing some trending things, and I think they're worth a discussion.
Yeah, it goes back to that different is better, right? Where someone's not used to, oh, a mushroom, what is that? Like, or hydration.
Mushrooms, so let's start there. You know, mushrooms are continuing to trend. And of course, what's really interesting is mushrooms aren't new. I mean, they've been part of certainly traditional Chinese medicine and cultures going back. I mean, they found a mummy in the Tyrolean Alps who had a medicine bag with mushrooms in it from back in something AD. I mean, it was like, you know, it's been, mushrooms have been in use for a long, long time, medicinally speaking. And certainly, you know, they have significant value, particularly for the immune system, the beta-glucan content of them, and some other components. And so there are many different types. Probably the three most significantly researched ones, you got some good human data on it, is reishi, shiitake, and maitake. And there's others, but each of these individually have really good research. Maitake even has one, a specific branded material, whose name escapes me at the moment, but at a really low dose, you know, that has been shown to be really effective. So it's really cool if you're trying to formulate, because you don't have to try to divide it between four capsules or something. You can easily fit it in one capsule and have plenty of room left for other stuff. So each of those have good, solid research on it. But what's interesting to me is that you can combine them and get a greater effect. Now, oftentimes you hear the term synergistic bandied about. Excuse me. And synergistic is a real term, but it has a specific scientific meaning. To put it simply, it means that when you use them together, you get a better overall result and response than if you use them separately. And so sometimes people say they're synergistic, and they're not necessarily. They may be complementary, but not synergistic. But mushrooms, these three that I mentioned, is a really nice study. There's more than one, but there's a really nice study published that showed how that combination together had a much greater effect on macrophages, certain kinds of immune cells. That it had a real, you know, immunomodulatory response, some very significant, and that combination made the difference, more so than when they tested them individually. So I love that. I love the idea of, but again, if you're gonna formulate, you're gonna do something with this. Don't just like willy-nilly toss in some different mushrooms. What are the doses used in research? What are we seeing together? And do it that way, and you can come up with something that's really cool. And I do see mushrooms continuing to grow. Again, they have credibility. They've been around and in use for thousands of years, and there's more and more and more research coming out on them all the time. So yeah, and different directions for different purposes. So I see that as definitely being a trending area that if I were running my own brand, I would certainly seriously consider a mushroom product for that, or a product that also includes mushrooms as part of that. Now, you mentioned something else, the whole trend for raw organ materials. And it's so funny because everything old is new again. I started in this industry in 1979. And what they called glandular extracts at the time, or what we're calling raw organs, really big at the time, and then kind of fizzled out a little bit. And it kind of started with desiccated liver. In fact, the whole industry back in the year one has sort of started with desiccated liver and brewer's yeast as the original dietary supplement ingredients, back before they called them dietary supplements. And then it kind of grew from there. And certainly there has been a lot of use of desiccated liver. You had Olympic athletes using desiccated liver back in the 1950s because it had vitamin B12 in it and other nutrients that made a difference for these people. There's been experimental animal research where the animals were given desiccated liver and increased their endurance by like 750%.
Wow.
So there's certainly a lot of background with that. But, and then you say, okay, is there any other data on them? Well, the data on glandulars is pretty sparse right now. There is, or organs, there is a study from some years back on a thymus glandular material where, and a thymus is important because it helps, it helps lymphocytes become T cells, and it's a very important for the immune system. And it was a double-blind study where 98 healthy older people and 19 younger people from Yugoslavia, back when there was a Yugoslavia, were given this, and it substantially improved their T cells and other immune cells, and increased the production of antibodies, and it had this effect. So it even helped with certain allergic reactions. So there is some data there. The only thing that causes me to hesitate is, I see the trend. I see things coming up and popping up in places. But right now, there's somewhat of a disparity between science catching up to philosophy.
Mm.
I think we need more science to support this. And in the early days, they were using thyroid extracts. Well, the thyroid extracts actually had, naturally occurring thyroid hormones in there. So yeah, it worked. but then the FDA said, no, that's a drug. You got to take out that, And so I think there is, as it gains in popularity, it's going to have more research on it, and it's a direction to go. And if somebody wants to start a brand that does that, they certainly can. They're just going to have a little bit of a regulatory challenge in finding the data to support the claims they might like to make about
it. It's a little too early, it sounds like.
I think it is.
Yeah.
I think it is. But you could do you want to do a desiccated liver one? There's data. You want to do a thymus one? There's data. The others, not so much. At least I haven't seen it.
Mm-hmm.
So, now, another category that was mentioned was eye health. And that is a huge potential. Oh, my goodness. For years and years, the name of the game was products that emulated the formulas used in the ARIDS studies. The ARIDS studies were done on the progression of macular degeneration, that this combination of nutrients helped to slow macular degeneration. And everybody was coming out with their version of those formulas. And that's a big deal. There's been a tremendous amount of research on different nutraceuticals for different aspects of eye health. To me, some of the more meaningful ones in later years have been the stuff on lutein zeaxanthin in particular, where they're really looking at, helping to stave off damage from blue light that happens from digital devices.
Mm-hmm.
And we're a digital society, you sit in front of the computers, we're looking at your smartphones right in front of your face, and watching your TV and all these different sources, and even fluorescent lights, you get all this blue light exposure. Now, blue light exposure causes damage to your eye, can cause headaches, can cause eye fatigue, all kinds of problems. And unlike a situation where a lot of times you think of eye problems or that you think of maybe older people, this is happening to younger people because they spend so much digital time.
Yeah.
So it's not just older. So the potential, here is a category that from Gen Z up through baby boomers has potential for all of those generations. Everybody needs something that can help them with these categories. And it can make a big difference. And it can be an experiential product. Because if you're using those right carotenoids, lutein and zeaxanthin, and there's a cryptoxanthin, and there's a capsaicin, and there's astaxanthin. All of these have profound effects on helping to stave off blue light and create macular support and reduce eye fatigue and help improve focus and do many of these things. When somebody is having these problems, starts using a supplement, they go, "Hey, wait a minute, I'm not noticing some of the same problem." That's pretty experiential,
yeah.
You know. And so that's really cool. So I think that is a category that is not only trending, but continuing to trend, and is not going to let up anytime in the near future, because I don't see anybody stopping using digital devices.
Yeah, it's only going to get bigger and bigger, which begs the problem. I guess it becomes a marketing problem at that point, right? Because now you're marketing to everyone is the same as marketing to no one, right? So it's about slicing and dicing that brand, maybe.
It is slicing and dicing. It is. You still, no matter what you do, you still have to go after target audience.
Yeah.
Can't go after everybody the same. I mean, you can go after everybody, but you have to have individual plans for doing that.
Exactly.
And different plans. You're gonna you want to go after baby boomers, go to Facebook.
Right.
You know, you want to go after Gen Z. Yeah, I don't even know who you go after these days. Whatever one they're looking at.
Yeah, whatever TikTok or whatever the new TikTok.
Yeah, one of those, right?
Yeah.
And so, so yeah, you have to slice and dice. You're right. That's kind of what it's about for that. Now, what I find interesting is the category of hydration. You know, when you look at like sports nutrition, back when sports nutrition products was really gaining popularity in this industry, it was all about the bodybuilder. Any product you came out with is for bodybuilders who had big muscular guys on the label, and you saw. You didn't see sort of the common man, you know, or the common woman, because everybody wanted to be them. Now it's changed. Now you're seeing more people saying, "Hey, I work out at the gym, or I'm on my Peloton, or I'm just have an active lifestyle, or maybe I just work outside a lot." Or I'm going golfing, whatever it is, you know, hydration is really, really important. Makes all the difference in the world between feeling good and being able to continue, or starting to feel a little bit sick, a little bit, because you're losing water at a rapid rate and you aren't able to put it back as quickly. And not just water, but other nutrients that you're losing through sweating. And that's one of the things that's making hydration so very popular, not to mention, you know, people concerned with the health of their skin in general and how it looks, hydration is important, but certainly that sports nutrition angle. And you can, and listen, if you're using you can be using an RTD and have something like a Gatorade or whatever, but you can also have powders that people take and mix in with water. And it's important to, when you do this, to not only what ingredients you're putting in there, but also to make sure that the concentrations of solids in the liquid isn't too high. Because here's what happens. If it's too concentrated in the liquid, you drink it and you're doing physical activity. Your body says, "Oh, this is a bit too concentrated to absorb. So I have to dilute it." How does it dilute it? It gives up its own fluids into your gut to dilute it so it can absorb it. That's kind of contraindicated if you want hydration,
because
that's actually causing temporary dehydration in order to become hydrated. So if you do your formulation correctly, do your science correctly, you can formulate it in a way so it's actually going to be the proper concentrations of solids in a liquid and put in the right amounts. One of the trends I'm seeing is people putting in way too many electrolyte minerals in there. Just too concentrated dose. No. Yes, you need that, but don't put in so much. You're doing the horsepower game. You don't want to do the horsepower game with electrolytes. You want to have it in a bottle, and you put it in your water bottle, and you're drinking it throughout the time you're doing your activity. You don't do it afterwards to hydrate. You do it throughout to hydrate. And if you do that, you're going to constantly be supplying the electrolytes, and you're going to constantly be able to absorb them at these huge levels. That's a problem, okay? So that's one of the things. Choose carefully what you need to have in there. And if you don't know, make sure you work with a contract manufacturer who's got somebody on staff, you know, that has the knowledge to formulate it for you. But one of the other areas that's interesting is something called multiple transportable carbohydrates, which is basically nothing more than a combination of glucose and fructose, about a 2-to-1 ratio. Research, published research has shown that when you use that in the formula, again, keeping the concentration where it needs to be, it actually increased your body's ability to be hydrated. You actually got hydrated better, took up the water better, because what happens is the reason it's called multiple transportable carbohydrates is there's different intestinal transporters for the sugar. So you end up taking up in more than one way. So you get the nutrients much more quickly and effectively, and you burn those carbohydrates, you oxidize those carbohydrates for energy at a higher rate, at like about 65% higher rate. So you're feeling the energy, you're feeling better hydration, you're having less fatigue if you do that. So creating a formula makes a big difference. I had actually formulated a product which shall remain nameless, and we field tested it with a bunch of people out playing golf in the summer in Arizona. And everybody who used it performed super well. The other group drank water just as a control, and they were feeling absolutely crappy at the end of the day. They were, you know, dehydrated. They were just not keeping it. So it's a huge difference. And so I see hydration products continuing to be a big deal. People are physically active. They're going to continue to be physically active, and they're going to need to hydrate. And if you do it right, you can have a fantastic product that will make a huge difference. People are going to notice the difference. I think it's a fantastic addition to somebody's product.
Yeah, it's one of those fringe niches that I think are just super valuable.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Besides the markets and the ingredients, what about some of like the ancillary things? I'd love to get your opinion on like maybe some sustainability, like basically an angle to go after, right? So besides, and form factor too, right? But besides gummies, because everybody knows gummies are huge, right?
So sustainability, we're seeing this across the board, not just in dietary supplements, but in the cosmetics industry as well.
Mm.
A lot more concern about sustainability. People are asking questions about the ingredients. Are they coming from a sustainable source? Sometimes they're asking questions about the packaging, particularly in the cosmetics industry, but also the dietary supplement. What about sustainability of that? They're having more of a ecological conscience regarding the product. And I have to credit that a lot to Gen Z. I think there's a lot more younger people who are asking these questions and being concerned. And the other thing that I'm seeing both, especially in the cosmetic industry, but also in the dietary supplement industry, along with married to the whole sustainability part of it, is the simplicity one, where you see in cosmetics, the less ingredients that are more effective. And I'm seeing that more slowly, but I'm seeing that occurring more in the dietary supplement, where it's, again, instead of taking, let me do everything but the kitchen sink, put in 50 ingredients, how about I put in 5 or 4, put them in that correct dose, make them real ingredients, something solid that you can hang your hat on that isn't a lot of smoke and mirrors. People are appreciating the honesty of that, especially if you have the science to support it, you can show it. So I think those are that sustainability and simplicity trend that we're seeing in cosmetics is moving into the dietary supplement industry, and I welcome it wholeheartedly.
That's interesting. I mean, that makes total sense for like a food and packaging item, but for a supplement, I'm wondering what your take on that is. Do you think it's like the audience is just becoming more sophisticated, or do you think the audience may be taking other things and it's like, well, I already have B12 in my multi and I'm already have.
It could be both, but I'm seeing, particularly from Gen Z, we're seeing a lot more of, you've got all these things. Let me, show me the meat, show me the proof, show me the science, show me something that all of these things are doing something. So you're seeing that in a way that you didn't used to see it, where people would just take somebody's word for it. Oh, it's got all these great things and this is all good for me. Fantastic. I'll take it. Gen Z is a little more like, show me the proof.
Mm.
And so I think, yes, your point is true. Somebody's saying, hey, I'm already taking that. I don't need to double up or triple up. But Gen Z's approach, I think, is as that generation continues to grow and take supplements, I think we're going to see more and more of this happening. And again, just from what I said earlier, I'm all for putting in clinically relevant doses of stuff and not just tossing stuff in there for good looks.
Makes total sense. Lastly, before we wrap up, because I want to be respectful of your time, but do you have any thoughts on any trends in selling channels or different selling channels or new selling channels that you're seeing from a brand selling side? And if not, that's okay.
You know, what I can tell you is this. From channel trends, you know, depending upon the channel trends, you definitely see some types of products selling better than others. We mentioned earlier, you know, food, drug, mass. You know, there's certain kinds of products that just continue to move there. And they tend to be more sort of old school kind of things. The direct-to-consumer is one of the more innovative channels of distribution where people try all kinds of things. And you'll find a lot of doctors or influencers that are involved in helping to sell the brand in a way that isn't the case in retail, in brick and mortar retail. That direct-to-consumer channel is heavily based on those influencers. And I see it all the time, which can be both a good and a bad thing. I see influencers that make all kinds of crazy claims and about stuff. And it's like, it's not true. You're saying something, but people trust them and they go with it. And so that whole direct-to-consumer approach makes a big difference. I saw a product not too long ago, a brand who shall remain nameless that said, did you know that 80% of the protein powder you take is converted into sugar in your body? Well, that's not true. You know, gluconeogenesis is the process by which that happens. That's a very energy expensive process for your body to do. And it only does it if it doesn't have glucose from another source. So that statement that trying to scare people into using something else is just kind of, you know, untrue and ridiculous. But again, experts, real experts and so-called experts, is definitely a huge trend in direct to consumer and all kinds of products. All kinds of unique products, not just the same old, are being sold that way, which can be very, very interesting. It can be a good thing. The only other thing I would add is you asked earlier about like other delivery forms besides gummies. I'm seeing a lot more functional food stuff, things like chocolates or candies or functional food ingredients out there. That has its limitations though, because those things oftentimes becomes harder to store or sell on something like Amazon because, you know, they melt. And then there's the products that are melts that are like little tablets that melt in your mouth. Powders, those are things that are definitely starting to trend more as people want alternative delivery forms. So anyway, that's, I think that's everything you asked about.
Yeah, this was fantastic chatting with you, Gene. I'm glad you were able to make some time today. If people want to learn more about you, where they can work with you and use your expertise, knowledge.
Go to NutriScienceLabs.com. I am the Vice President of Scientific and Regulatory Affairs, but what I also do is for our branded customers who come to us and they want products formulated, I'll formulate the products for them. And I'll write them a white paper that gives them substantiation for all claims and give them something real. And so if they'd like to, you know, engage our contract manufacturing services as well as my services for doing formulation as all part of the arrangement, that's where they can reach me. They can also just go to our NutriScience Labs website. I've got a lot of blogs and some podcasts and things there that they can read. And they can even go to LinkedIn and find me there and a lot of stuff I've posted. So
that white paper is actually really a valuable market piece. You mentioned it as like sort of a sideline, but I think that if anyone working with you for a brand new formulation, something different like we spoke about, then having a white paper behind it that they could use.
It makes a big difference because somebody just says, oh, here's a product that's great. What proof do you have? Oh, by the way, So I'll put in, you know, a list of claims. Like imagine a table, and on one column, here's the claims. The other column, it'll say like, you know, astaxanthin study one, astaxanthin study two. And then down below, summaries of what the studies show. And you have a full document, many pages long, that says, here's your claims, here's the substantiation for your claims, here's the citations, references for those. So you have a complete, basically, dossier that supports the claims that you are looking to make. You know, hopefully you're trying to make structure function claims and aren't making drug claims, but, you know, the ones that I'll offer will be structure function claims that hopefully are compelling as well as substantiated.
That's hugely valuable. You're basically just handing your marketer information on a silver platter.
Well, that's what they get if they come to NutriScience Labs. We'll give that. That's one of the points of differentiation we have between other kinds of manufacturers who may not have somebody as part of their team that does that.
Fantastic. Gene, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Creative Thirst is a direct response digital agency focusing on conversion rate optimization and A/B testing. We work with dietary supplement companies who are struggling to maximize the profitability of their funnels so they can scale. Through the last 7 years in the online health space, we've optimized many dietary supplement businesses. And in that time, we've uncovered the three critical funnels for success. We put together that information in a free digital download called The Three Funnels Every Health Supplement Business Needs to Build a Multi-$1 Million Empire. You can get that free report by going to creativethirst.com. Scroll down to the appropriate section and click on the blue Get Your eBook button.